Good morning. My name is Ann Traum. I represent Mr. Willis. Is the microphone okay for your hearing?
We can hear you.
It's okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, and I'll try to keep my eye on the clock. My client's Fourth Amendment rights were violated because he was seized without reasonable suspicion based on a missing persons report that had already been resolved. Certainly we do not dispute as a general matter that police can question a person based on a missing persons report to find out if they know anything about the missing person. But the scope of that stop should be limited.
You don't claim that the officers who actually did this knew that the missing persons report had been cleared.
No. I mean, I think it's clear in the testimony that this officer, he may have had access to knowledge because he knew about the prior event number. He may have had access to knowledge, but I don't think that
What does access to knowledge mean?
Well, I mean, he said that he was given an event number with a date of 12-12-02, which was the date of the prior stop. And I think he said in his testimony that he would have had to look at other reports. So my inference from that is that nothing was immediately available to him at that moment without sort of asking for some report. So I don't think that he knew about it.
And does your argument depend upon the fact that this missing person report on the NCIC was erroneous? What if it was still valid? Would he have reasonable suspicion to make the arrest?
I don't think, I mean...
I'll call it the arrest, the detention during which he discovers the gun.
I guess I'd like to sort of address that in at least two ways. First is that I do think the fact that it was erroneous is important. I don't think it's dispositive.
That is to say, even if it were correct, there's insufficient suspicion to detain?
I think, yes. There's no allegation in a missing persons report, and particularly in this missing persons report, that this missing persons report indicates criminal wrongdoing. It's much more like an anonymous tip, except that there's no criminality associated with this, and it's totally unverified.
But when we've got a request for locate from Escondido, what should the officers have done here? Okay, we're going to take out the question as to whether it should have been cleared and whether it had been on the books for too long. But what should the officers do when they run a plate check and they come back with a missing persons report, even though there isn't any indication of criminality? Are they supposed to ignore it?
No, I mean, that was sort of my initial point, is that I think that it would be appropriate to stop someone and just ask them about the missing persons report. But that's not what happened here. They arrested this person.
Well,
and
they didn't arrest him initially. They stopped him. And he's out of his car, sort of looking furtively as though he might make a break for it because he's got an officer on either end of him. And at that point, the officer, who testifies later on for safety reasons, says, is there anything I ought to know about? Now, he's not patting him down for drugs.
He's not patting him down. I actually think that question is essentially very similar to a pat-down. But they do a full Terry stop here, and I think a full Terry stop requires reasonable suspicion of criminality.
They say, hey, you got anything? What keeps an officer from walking up in the street and say, hey, do you have something I ought to know about? Isn't this like the case of the people on the bus and saying, may I search your suitcase?
Well, I think that you're...
You know the case we're talking about. They can walk up to somebody. They are people just like everybody else and say, hey, you got something that I ought to know about. He could say, mind your own business. Go away.
I think that that is the correct analysis and that that's not what happened here. I think that it's fair to say that you can stop someone. Someone could stop me on the street and say, look, there's a missing persons report. Do you know something about this person? You know, let's say they have some reason to think that I might know something. But that's not what happened here. I mean, they actually are sort of executing a full Terry stop, and for that, to execute a full Terry stop, you need
that.
Reasonable suspicion of criminality.
But I'm just not persuaded. I don't see how they execute a full Terry stop. They didn't pat him down. They hadn't even sort of reached him. They said, you know, even before they got close enough to pat him down, they said, hey, you got anything I have to know about? He could have said no. He could have said, mind your own business. He could have said, I don't have to answer that. Instead, he says, yeah, I got a gun. Well, at that point, they get his gun. You know, what are they going to do?
Well, actually...
There was no... You know, you want to say it's a full Terry stop. A full Terry stop is when they say, raise your hand and I'm going to start patting you down and feeling your body. That doesn't happen here.
Well, they actually, I mean, the magistrate found that he was, before they asked the question, do you have a gun, the magistrate found that he was detained, that he was not free to leave, that he was ordered to the front of the car and to raise his hands.
Well,
before they asked the question about the gun.
This is a somewhat different stop from an ordinary traffic stop in that we have two police cars. One comes behind and one comes in front. And it strikes me at that point, if the question is, did he feel free to leave, I think the answer is no.
That's what the magistrate found, correct.
I think he has been detained as of this moment, before he gets out of the car. Now, he might have looked furtive and might have looked as though he was going to run. That's what the officer testified. The officer then said, stop and tell me if you got anything. But it seems to me that he was, a reasonable person would have thought he was not free to leave once he has a cop car in front of him and a cop car behind him.
I think that's correct.
And what,
I think
what, and what flows from that? Has he then been detained without reasonable suspicion and anything discovered during the course of that detention has to be suppressed? Is that your argument or is there some other argument?
That is my argument.
Well,
that
you may be persuaded, counsel, but I'm not persuaded.
Well, as a fact,
why? I mean, he stopped and got out of the car. He wasn't driving anywhere. The fact that you're hemmed in by police cars, you know, if you were sort of about to drive away and they sort of cut in front of you, you can't go anywhere. But he was getting out of the car. He had gotten out of the car already, and they put the police cars there to keep him from driving off. Had they actually said you can't leave on foot?
They didn't have to say he can't leave because that's
no. The answer is no.
They didn't say that, no. But the magistrate found.
What was the sequence of communications?
The sequence is that he steps out of his car. He is sandwiched by the police officer.
That's
what the magistrate found.
The first thing that happened is he parks the car. He steps out, right?
Because mm-hmm,
so
it's in front of his house.
He's about to drive off. He has turned off the ignition. He's left the car. He's about to make his way on foot somewhere.
Mm-hmm. He's sandwiched between two police cars. He's told to raise his hand, ordered to the front of the car, before he's ever asked a question about a gun. And the magistrate found, it's an uncontested finding, that he was detained at that moment and he was not free to leave. To make that kind of detention, I think you need reasonable suspicion of criminality. That is not just asking about a missing persons report. And in this case, the report that the officer made never even mentions any follow-up on the missing persons report. And he never, even in his testimony, he never gets to the missing persons report until he's executed a full arrest, talked about the gun, done a records check. I mean, the thing is entirely a done deal before he even suggests that he mentions, that he doesn't follow up on the missing persons report. So that leaves a real question as to whether this is what motivated his stop.
It doesn't really matter because at some point he says, I have a gun, and then the whole missing persons report steps in the background because now he's got a gun.
Right, but if his true motivation was to find out about the missing persons report, he wouldn't have had to execute this kind of stop without reasonable suspicion of criminality, and he could have simply, and I think which is the proper thing to do, simply say, do you know anything about this missing persons report? Oh, it's cleared up. Thank you very much. You may go into your apartment now. That's not what happened. So I'd like to reserve the balance of my time, if I may.
Okay, we'll hear from the government.
May it please the Court. My name is Andrew Duncan. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Las Vegas for the District of Nevada, and I represent the appellee United States. Government is going forward here on two separate theories, one that the officer did have reasonable suspicion at the time he had contact with the defendant, reasonable suspicion that criminal activity was involved. And second, government is going under the theory of the caretaking policy. And we're urging this court to follow the community caretaking function. Let's talk first about the community caretaking function and what we have in this particular case. We have a police officer on patrol after 2 a.m. in the morning in a high crime area, as he testified based on his experience working in that area of Las Vegas. He, at some point during his patrol, sees this vehicle and runs the plate. What does the officer hear when he runs the plate? He hears that, A, this is a suspicious vehicle, and, B, that this vehicle is somehow involved with a missing person. And on the record at the time of suppression, he explained what that meant, is that someone involved had reported that this vehicle was either owned or had some relationship to a missing person.
Well, you said A and B. What was the A?
A was that he had a report that this vehicle had been reported as a suspicious vehicle at some earlier time.
What does that mean?
Was
it something aside from the missing persons report?
It was. Apparently, at some point, this vehicle had been pulled over, involved in what was considered a suspicious vehicle. At least that's what he knew at the time.
And do we know anything more than report as suspicious vehicle?
No, he did not. He did not know anything.
Now, he had been pulled over a week before in connection with the missing person. Are you sure that that's not the same pullover?
But I'm saying what the officer knew that night. And what the officer knew that night was what he was dealing with was a vehicle that had been pulled over as a suspicious vehicle and the fact that there was this missing person.
But so you have to tell us a little more about this suspicious vehicle designation, because it's a little suspicious in itself to have the police designating things and maybe people as suspicious, just sort of a suspicion in the air. I mean, I understand theft, you know, possible stolen vehicle, a vehicle that's possibly involved in a crime. I understand that. A vehicle that's been involved with a missing person. I understand that. But sort of a general designation of suspicious, I am a little suspicious about police having that kind of things in their computer, sort of a blanket designation of suspicious. So what is this animal?
As the officer explained at the suppression hearing, that the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department could have various reasons for saying that the vehicle was suspicious. For example, he explained that there could be a reason that a member of the public reported that vehicle as perhaps being involved in some sort of crime. So there were various reasons. But we concede the fact.
Could it be that the suspicious vehicle report is the result of the prior stop?
Yes. Yes, and we're not denying that. What I'm trying to get across to the court is this is what the officer is faced with at 2:30 a.m. that morning.
Well, I understand, but you're trying to get extra momentum from this designation of suspicious vehicle, and if it's sort of it's garbage in, we don't know what it is. It could be anything at all, including being cleared of being involved with a missing person. It's sort of being, you know, any of us could have vehicles that have designated suspicious of the police for no particular reason. You know, this reliance on databases, as the Supreme Court has told us, is to a great degree dependent on our understanding of the integrity of the database and that the inputs are in some ways controlled to make sure that the things that designate something as suspicious are reliable and kept up to date. And you standing there and telling me this was designated as a suspicious vehicle with no ability to tell me anything more, tell me, you know, we ought to give extra deference to the officer because he has his designation, just makes me sort of uncomfortable, really. And I know it actually sort of detracts from the other thing. Unless you can show me something that, you know, that says that this is really something that is reliable, that is kept up to date, that has a meaning other than, you know, some cloud of suspicion.
Perhaps I can clarify our position.
I'm trying to give you a chance to do that.
Our position is that even without that report, take out the suspicious vehicle out of the equation here.
You're the one who said A and B, and you're the one who's been standing there for the last 3 or 4 minutes trying to persuade us that there was more than a missing person or a sort of missing person report. There was this other thing here that we ought to give extra deference to. Now, if you want to back off on that and say it's not A and B, it's only B, forget A, then we'll have to consider that.
Allow me to clarify. For the community caretaking function, it's the government's position that it is enough that the officer is out patrolling and he has received information that this vehicle is involved in a missing persons case.
That's your B. I understand.
Right.
We can talk about B, but are you backing off A? Are you saying
when
A?
It comes as to the community caretaking function, correct. As for whether or not he had reasonable suspicion.
No. Let's go back. You said you've got A and B, and B was going to be your community caretaking function. Then you said there was something else.
B is
he had two things. He has community caretaking function, which is B, and then he had this suspicious thing here going, which is A.
Right. And it, with the community
caretaking doesn't have A in it. That's only B. I'm just saying we're relying just on the community caretaking function. You're backing off the other stuff.
I will address the community caretaking. It's the government's position that this officer...
Not answer my question. Are you relying on this other thing, in which case we need to keep discussing it until I understand it, or are you giving up on it?
In small part, we are relying on it as the totality of the circumstances.
Tell me how, if we don't understand what this thing is. We can keep talking about it until I understand. If you're relying on it, if you want to get some mileage out of it, if you want us to give your case additional, the officer additional deference based on this, you're going to have to tell us what this thing is and how it's reliable, how it came to be in there, and how... the officers relying on this thing is reasonable. So keep talking if you want to, or give up on it. I don't know.
We will concede.
What is the best you can do?
We will concede that issue and simply state that under the community caretaking function, it is enough that the officer has this information that this car is involved in a missing persons case.
To make sure I understand what you just conceded, you said we will concede that issue. Let me ask you what you conceded. Did you concede that there was no reasonable suspicion to make the stop and you're now relying on community caretaking? What did you just concede?
That in the community caretaking function, it is not necessary part of our argument that he had any suspicion that there was a suspicious vehicle.
I see. So you're still saying that there was reasonable suspicion?
Correct.
And you're saying that there was reasonable suspicion at the time the two police cars sandwiched this vehicle. They had reasonable suspicion that there was criminality going on.
Based on what?
Correct. Based on the fact that all of the factors taken in total.
And what are those factors?
The factors are that, again, not to go into this too much, the previously suspicious vehicle, the fact that this vehicle is involved in a missing persons case.
I think we're back to third base.
The fact, well, there are other factors as well, that this defendant accelerated away from the police officer and took what the police officer viewed to be
Accelerated away from the police officer and parked on the other side of the street a block away? Is that what you're saying?
This is earlier in the sequence of events.
Well, I understand. There were two times. He accelerated and he followed because he thought that this was sort of suspicious.
Correct.
He then stopped his vehicle. He gets out, goes up to the second floor, pounds on the door, comes back down again, then gets back in his vehicle that has the windows down. And I'm not sure why having windows down at 2:30 in the morning on Las Vegas is all that suspicious. But in any event, does a U-turn, accelerates, comes back and parks on the other side of the street a block away. That's a suspicion of criminality?
It's our position that when you take all of the circumstances...
But that's one of the circumstances that leads one to believe to what you say is the reasonable suspicion of criminality?
That's correct.
Why is that suspicion of criminality? He seems not to be fleeing. He's driving too fast, and he's making U-turns that might be illegal, but I don't think he's after him for a traffic violation.
What the officer testified to is that based on his training and experience, this was an individual who was trying to evade him by taking quick turns and by accelerating away.
He tries to evade him by parking in front of an apartment house, going up the second floor, coming back down, and then taking off and parking a block away. He's not a very successful evader if that's evasion.
Well, his testimony was that he tried to evade him in the initial sequence of events, and then after that he pulls up to the apartment, runs up to an apartment, leaving the windows open, which based on the officer's training and experience in that particular neighborhood in Las Vegas would be very unusual. Then comes back down to the...
Because
it's such a high crime area with such a high rate of car thefts and other... property type crimes.
Does it become less unusual when he realizes that he's gone upstairs only to come back downstairs again immediately?
It does become less unusual under those circumstances. But then,
let me make sure then, and I don't want to leave anything out, and I don't want to unduly prolong this. Just the list of things in your view that amount to reasonable suspicion that justify the detention when they stop the car and put the police cars in front and behind: the suspicious vehicle report, the NCIC missing person report, and the behavior in driving his car. That's it? Or is there more?
That's correct. And then his behavior at the final stop when he gets out of the car.
Oh, no. I'm asking, did they have reasonable suspicion when they boxed in his car?
Up to that point, those are the factors we view as reasonable suspicion. Correct.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
In your view, that amounts to reasonable suspicion. You say these are the factors that go towards, but you think that amounts to reasonable suspicion.
Correct. That's our position, that he had reasonable suspicion, but it's also our position, as we noted, in regard that...
What date this happened?
Yes.
What date was it?
It was in December. I believe it was December 12th. Okay. December 19th.
Now, why didn't you challenge the magistrate judge's finding that there was no reasonable suspicion? Because you did, you did file something in the district court, with the district court, when there was a challenge. You said nothing about any disagreement with the magistrate's decision that there was no reasonable suspicion.
Correct. It's our view that that issue was not waived by doing that. I believe that's the...
Well, no, I understand that there's a waiver question coming in a minute, but I didn't quite ask you that. I said, why didn't you challenge it?
Because the government had been successful...
On this cockamamie community policing argument?
On the community care argument.
On the caretaking argument?
Yes, and it was our position that the... other argument had been fully there would be a record before this court in regard to that, as the record was fully explored in regard to the reasonable suspicion.
And in fact, primarily
that's what was argued in front of the federal magistrate.
You say that was what's your premise? What was argued in front of the magistrate judge?
The reasonable suspicion issue was fully briefed and argued, and there was a record created for this court in order to review reasonable suspicion.
Let's say we wind up not agreeing with you that there was reasonable suspicion. I understand your position to be that you can detain somebody and do a full Terry stop. Not necessarily was a full Terry stop here, but I take it to be your position that you can do a stop, you can do a detention of a person just based on the. Community caretaking function.
Correct.
And what's your best authority for that?
We would.
It's a little counterintuitive. It's one thing to say, look, the police have community caretaking functions, and so they can ask questions. They can even knock on doors and say, you know, there's a missing child. You know, have you seen? Have you seen? Nobody disputes they can do that. It's a whole different proposition to say that in performing those functions, they can treat people they deal with as if they were suspects of crime. And Terry was, in fact, limited to situations. Now, maybe the Terry rationale extends to any situation where the policeman comes with a hand reach and you can say, well, he's entitled not to be, to protect himself, to pat somebody down. But it's a much more uncomfortable position than saying we suspect somebody of crime. This is somebody we have reason to, found a suspicion to believe is involved in criminality. And, you know, the criminality aspect of it then raises the inference of danger. Well, there's any number of things a policeman can do or any peace officer, policeman, fireman, whatever, can do under the caretaking function that would bring him into contact with people that have nothing to do with crime. And I'm just sort of wondering where you get this authority to say, well, they can pat down anybody to talk to.
As noted by the court, I don't believe there's any specific authority either for or against this specific sort of thing in the Ninth Circuit.
What would be writing the opinion that's going to decide this issue in the first instance? And let's say I were writing the opinion. I don't know who's going to write the opinion, but one of us will. Give us a little help on how we would write it to come out your way. How would we explain this to our friends and neighbors and people in the community who would have to explain what we are now saying the police might do? How would we make this acceptable and people say, yes, that's a wise exercise of constitutional authority?
Our Fourth Amendment analysis has always dealt with a balancing test, and I would submit to the court that our position is that the court rule that the public interest in finding missing people in this particular case outweighs the...
But nobody keeps the police from walking up and saying, sir, your car is involved in a missing person's report. Would you be kind enough to talk to us about it, because we're concerned that this person may be missing, and I was wondering if you know who they were. You know, people are worried about her. In a polite, friendly, non-coercive way to seek information about the owner of the car, or let's say if there's a child missing in the neighborhood, politely knocking on the door and saying, have you seen this child? Have you seen, there's nothing that prevents them from doing that. They don't have to say, hey, buddy, you can't go anywhere. Raise your hands up and up against the car. They don't have to do that.
There may be circumstances where what you're saying is the correct course. However, each case brings up different circumstances, and in this case, the circumstances were a little bit different where they felt they have this report of a missing person. They feel that this individual is about to flee. He's looking furtively in both directions, so they tell him to stop. Officers did that.
When did the detention begin? When they sandwiched his car in, or did it only begin when they told him to stop and don't run away?
It would be our position that it's when they tell him to stop and don't run away. I mean, otherwise he could...
But this is not an ordinary traffic stop. We all know an ordinary traffic stop, the cop comes up behind you, and you either get out of the car or you don't get out of the car. But this is a very unusual traffic stop where the subject vehicle is boxed in.
Right. At that point, though, he's still free to continue about his business.
Well, is he? Would a reasonable person think that he's free to continue about his business when the cops have one behind and one in front? I don't think I would.
Well, it's our position that is only when they see the defendant looking furtively and they feel he's about to run away.
Maybe they wouldn't, maybe somebody would and maybe somebody wouldn't on their own, but that's not all that happens. They say stop, so it's not just that, the police are on either side. I mean, he may just say, well, okay, they boxed me in, I'm not driving anywhere, but I'll just go about my business walking around. But the police at that point give an order, stop. Stop for the police doesn't mean, hey, stop if you feel like it. It means stop, and there's an implicit threat that if you don't do what they say, they might tackle you or shoot you. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And if you at that point say, no, I'm not going to stop, I'm going to instead reach into my pocket or vest then you have a pretty good chance of being shot at that point. And then they say stop, and up against the vehicle. Do I understand the sequence of events correctly?
Correct, and I'll agree with the court.
So at that point, he's not free to leave, is he?
I'll agree with the court on that, yes.
I think he, at that point, if he had said, well, no, thank you, I'd rather not, and decided to walk away, he would have found himself tackled or manhandled, right?
He would have been detained, correct. Yes.
He would have been forcibly
held there, yes.
Yes. I mean, they probably would give him another order, stop, or will
something would have occurred to keep him there, yes.
So it's not quite right to say, as I think you... I understood you say to Judge Fletcher that he could have just gone about his business. As soon as the police said stop, he was in their control until they released him.
Correct.
Okay. So That's where we are. The question is, putting aside the question of whether there was suspicion of a crime, which I don't think you have much on to go on, can the police do that for community caretaking purposes?
And again, it's our position that yes, that you know this is a balancing test, and that the public interest in finding, in this case, a missing person, is outweighing the intrusion into this individual's liberty.
When Mr. Willis had been stopped the week before, were there two cars involved in that?
I don't know if the record is clear.
Did they sandwich him in on the previous stop?
I don't know if the record is clear on that, and I'm unaware as to.
I think I understand why an officer at 2:30 in the morning in that area might have called for backup, but why did they feel the need to box him in? The officer testified to that?
Based on the fact that they wanted to speak. I don't think he testified to that. On the record.
We could have had one officer pull up behind him and another one sort of pull across the street just as sort of a show of force, but I'm here in case there's any trouble in this area, without boxing his car in, right?
It could have happened that way, correct.
This is a little overbearing.
Well, it's our position that the officers...
For a community caretaking theory, that's a little overbearing, isn't it?
It's our position that they wanted to get to the bottom of what had occurred there, and under all of the circumstances, you know, at that time of night in that neighborhood, they felt that this was the appropriate way to, you know, to go about their patrol.
Okay, thank you. I think you may have a minute left for rebuttal. Oh, a minute and 17 seconds.
Okay. Just a few points I want to make. In terms of the reasonable suspicion, I think the court has had obviously a lengthy discussion of that. Not only did the government not sort of challenge the finding that there was no reasonable suspicion, but the magistrate's report doesn't actually have any findings that there was a traffic stop, any evasion. And in arguing the issue at the hearing, the government admitted that they could articulate no crime that they could think of that they actually believed this person to be committing, other than a possible traffic stop, which the magistrate then decided not to rely on. He also made no credibility determination on Officer Bromer on the traffic issue. So there's sort of nothing to rely on there for reasonable suspicion.
The magistrate judge made no credibility finding with respect to what?
To a possible traffic violation. Because he found that there was no traffic stop, and so he sort of put that issue aside and says...
Something about he made no credibility finding with respect to officer, and then I didn't hear what you said.
He made no credibility finding, and I think he says this at page 151, but I'm not sure. It's in his report. He found it unnecessary to assess Officer Bomer's credibility with respect to a possible traffic violation.
I see. So he just put it...
He just puts that aside.
Even if true... Irrelevant, in his view.
Yes, okay. Yes. Also, the suspicious vehicle issue, the magistrate notes in his report that that's sort of not criminal and can be done by a citizen. And the officer in his testimony at page 55 says the person can be lying. So it's totally unreliable information.
Let's talk about that. You know, it's easy enough in theory sitting here in San Francisco in the daylight to say, you know, the officers get this missing personal report, and they can just sort of politely walk up to somebody and say, excuse me, sir, you know, do you know anything about this? But there are officers on patrol. They say this is a bad neighborhood, and we know there are bad neighborhoods. I mean, if you ever try to get outside the courthouse here at night, which some of us have done from time to time, you know, it's not a totally comfortable situation. And there have been people who have been mugged, and you know, things do happen in this very neighborhood, and so they have somebody who is they do want to talk to, and they have good reason to talk to, and they have a legitimate community reason to talk to. Let's say there's not suspicion of a crime, but they worry that the guy, you know, it's nighttime, it's middle of the night, and they worry that the guy might have a gun. Or that, you know, might go down hard, and so they want to approach him and make sure that he hasn't got a weapon. That doesn't strike me as unreasonable, and it also strikes me that if we say police can't make sure that the person they're talking to is unarmed, that maybe they will say, well, you know, this community care taking function wasn't one of the things I was hired to do. I'm here to fight crime, and the next time I find a missing person or a missing car report, I'm just going to let them go because I don't want to put my life on the line talking to some guy about a missing car and having them pull out a knife and stab me in the gut. That's not an unrealistic thing to attribute to officers, is it? An unrealistic concern.
Well, I think that the concern is always there for officers, and the test is fairly clear about what they can do in terms. I mean, we've talked about.
We're writing on a clean slate as to what they can and cannot and should not be able to do when they approach somebody. I mean, put aside the question of suspicion. We could, you know,
right.
we will come out on that as we come out with it. But assuming that we say no, there was no suspicion of crime. So we are purely in the community caretaking area. We're going to say what it's reasonable for an officer to do. And there's the model of, you know, going through a nice middle-class neighborhood in the middle of the afternoon and knocking on doors and having, maids or housewives or house husbands or whatever open the door and they say, excuse me, have you seen a missing child? You know, you have that model. And then you have the model of police patrolling in the middle of the night in a neighborhood that's known to be have a lot of crime, where they really do take their lives in their hands every time they approach somebody. That's not an unreasonable concern. And I don't know that we can have the same model apply to every kind of police encounter involving community caretaking function. Why isn't it better to say, why isn't it more appropriate to say, look, if it's a legitimate police function, if it's something that police may legitimately do, and there's some things they can't, but there's some things they can't legitimately do, and they requires them in performing that function to approach somebody to within the proximity where they could be hurt, then they are entitled to take such measures as is reasonable in the circumstances to make sure that the person they're approaching doesn't harm them. Why is that a reasonable rule? And of course, if you're knocking door to door in a middle class neighborhood in the middle of the afternoon, you deal with things differently than if you're in the middle of a bad neighborhood at night, in the middle of the night. Why isn't that a better rule? Why isn't that the appropriate rule?
Well, I think what's problematic about it is that what do police do that sort of isn't in the interest of general public safety? I mean, I think there's the possibility here that it's just going to swallow the rule of Terry, which is you actually need to have reasonable suspicion of criminality to do a Terry stop, and you can't do a suspicionless stop. And also the Supreme Court's language in Katie, which was sort of the very original.
You have to read Terry in light of its facts. What Terry said, I mean, there are two ways of reading it. One of them is to say, well, when you have suspicion of criminality and therefore approach somebody, then you sort of start with a presumption that they're criminal and therefore have cause. The other way of looking at it is to say, look, when suspicion of criminality gives you a reason to approach somebody, then you apply a balancing test. But it doesn't, in that reading, exclude the possibility that the police could approach you on something other than suspicion of criminality, and you still do a balancing test. And you do a balancing test based on the full set of circumstances that may wind up being a little different than when you have suspicion of criminality, because suspicion of criminality does give you an extra, you know, additional
leg to stand on.
Yeah, but for example, if they stop you on a traffic stop, that's criminality too, and yet we wouldn't say that necessarily supports a Terry stop.
Right, but the court has said in the traffic stop situation that you can't sort of expand a traffic stop to be more than the scope of a traffic stop unless you have reasonable suspicion to believe that there's something more. And so once you're in that situation, you actually do need something more to expand what it is that you're doing, and that's exactly what I'm advocating here to be the rule, which is you can stop, you can, you know, sort of make an inquiry as to a missing persons report and say, do you know about this? But only on reasonable suspicion can you expand that into something else, which is, like here, a full-scope detention where you're ordered to put your hands up. I mean, that's something different.
To a question I asked you when you were doing your first argument, which is what should the officers have done here? Where did they cross the line? What are the limits of what they should do here when they've got the missing persons report? They should let the guy go at 2:30 and hope to find him during the day, or hope that he does something, or sort of track him, sort of follow him around, stalk him so that they can wait and see till he trips up and doesn't come to a full stop at a stop sign.
I think there's two answers, and it depends on the facts. But in this case, I think, you know, sort of going back to what Judge Fletcher was talking about, they sandwich him between the cars and order him to put his hands up, and I don't think without reasonable suspicion that they have a basis to do that, and there's not that basis here. So I think that goes over the limit.
But something short of that, maybe
yes.
An officer pulling up behind him with the other officer sitting across the street as sort of a backup in case of a problem in a tough area, would have been okay.
And you make an inquiry akin to sort of a very traditional traffic stop where you get out of your car, you look around, you approach the person, and you say, do you know anything about this missing persons? And then only can you sort of expand the scope of that inquiry if you have reasonable suspicion to make it something else, a different kind of stop.
Would it have been permissible for the officer, if the officer had been behaving in the way that you and Judge Bybee just discussed, that is to say, one officer in his car immediately behind Mr. Willis's car, another officer across the street for backup in case of trouble, Mr. Willis gets out of the car, and the officer says, do you have anything on your person that I should be concerned about? And Mr. Willis says, I have a gun.
So in that situation you're describing where he is still free to leave, but he just happens to ask this question.
How free to leave he really is.
I'm not sure he is, but I'm
asking you, in that circumstance, can the officer legitimately ask, do you have anything in your person that I should be concerned about? And he responds, I have a gun. What happens? Is that suppressible?
Because
at this point, the nature of the stop is not quite the same, and it could be, you know, an ordinary sort of traffic stop that might or might not lead to a ticket for crossing a double yellow line or making an illegal U-turn or whatever sort of thing he had in mind.
I don't want to concede that that's not suppressible, because I actually think that that question is exactly like a pat-down, and that's exactly why this officer frames the question that way. Because when he starts to talk about officer safety, he says that that's why he asked him that question, so that's exactly the answer that he expected one way or the other, was, I have a gun. And so, I mean, I don't want to sort of project in a different situation that that is permissible when you have sort of a less of a detention, but you still have this question, which is very akin to a pat-down.
Okay.
So I'm sort of not willing to concede that. I just want to make one other point, which, if I can just indulge me in the time, that the community caretaking function is originally sort of based on the idea that it's divorced from investigation. We certainly don't have...
I'm sorry, I did not hear
the community caretaker, when they talk about it in Katie for the first time, they're talking about a situation that's divorced from criminal investigation. Here, you really get the sense that it's a fallback from a criminal investigation that has lacking something. And also, just one final point on sort of the integrity of the database, which, Judge Kaczynski, you mentioned. The magistrate found that there was no evidence of the record of how long it normally takes to clear a missing persons report, and that the record was silent on whether the Las Vegas police did what they were supposed to do. And I don't think there's any case where the police are relying on their own bad information.
Does it really matter if we say a week's not unreasonable? Does it really matter?
I think that...
A week strikes me as not unreasonable.
I understand that response in terms of saying just on a timeline, a week is not unreasonable.
You bring up the case where it's 6 months, and then we may give you a different answer.
Right. I mean, I understand that response, but I think if you look at Justice O'Connor's concurrence in Arizona versus Evans, it's the reasonableness of the reliance on the database, not necessarily a particular time. And in Arizona versus...
But we don't know what happened here. There are many links in the chain, and we don't have a fact-finding process that can tell us or has told us and probably can tell us what happened. You've got different law enforcement agencies in different states. I don't exactly know how the clearance, and there may be some. Is there some federal involvement too in this database?
I think the federal rules that set up the NCIC, which says, you know, that Escondido was responsible for taking it out, but they needed the locate to take it out. That's sort of clear.
Yeah. Well.
And to that issue, I would say the burden's on the government to come forward with that. And the magistrate said there was no evidence of what was reasonable or how long it takes. So with that, I appreciate the time you've given to this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Cases are you sent submitted. You all don't make it easy on us. Good counsel is always makes a court's job more difficult. You know.